Mark, Bob Kennedy. In all the presentations I've seen about the economic outlook before today, there's always a big mention about the demographics and the ageing population in Australia, and it doesn't seem to have figured today. And we have this burgeoning ageing population. What effect is that going to have on the economy?
Yep. People worry about an ageing population for a number of reasons. Firstly, the impact on the pension system. In Australia, we don't have the problem that the US and some other countries have, where because their pension system is not funded, they have a significant problem with an ageing population and with a change in demographics, because they simply have this very large liability in the future and fewer workers to pay for it. Because we've got self-funded superannuation, that's just not an issue for Australia. So one issue is pensions. The second issue, of course, is healthcare. Something like 90% of healthcare costs over a person's lifetime are in the last year of life. And as people, there are more people in that age category that's closer to that last year of life, you've only got two options: either spend more on healthcare or get rid of them a year before they are about to go. And I suspect we'll be spending, and the estimates there are that about 3 or 4% to a little bit more of GDP will have to be spent on health. Now, I don't see this as a big issue, because the economy is growing and it will continue to grow. And yes, it will be 3 or 4% more as a fraction of GDP, going from 7 to 10 or 12%. It may be more than that, because there will be more old people voting for more spending on health. But we'll have a bigger GDP, a bigger pie to carve that health spending out of. So I see this as manageable. I'm not a pessimist at all on ageing. And the other effect is around the size of the actual workforce. And I see that what will happen, the workforce relative to the rest of the population, and I just think we will change the work environment over the next 20 to 30 years to make it easier for people who are older to work part-time, to work on their own hours and so on. And we won't have the same very low participation of 55-year-old plus males and females that we have currently. I think we'll see higher labour force participation, more flexibility, and I see that as a good thing. So I don't see the ageing population as a big risk for Australia. It is a risk for some economies. It's a problem for Japan, it's a problem for Germany and some of the European countries. I don't see it as a major risk here, because of these issues around pensions and so on being much more under control.
Bob, I'm glad you asked that question again, because I must have put that in your folder as well, following the Ahmed one, because that was one of the six challenges we discussed. We kicked off the morning, and demographics never sort of got a guernsey, so I'm glad at least it came up. Thanks, Bob. Good question.
Eric Neal from Flinders University. I'd hasten to add, as I said to Dean Jentz, I'm an amateur academic. As a chancellor, I'm not an academic, so I'm an amateur university person. But you mentioned the importance of China in the economic future. I was in China in December, and I presented 150 master's degrees to students of Nankai University, which is just a couple of hours east of Beijing. And those students, about 75, had done a course in international business relations, and the other 75 in hospital management. The interesting thing was that the course was conducted by lecturers from Flinders University, or provided by Flinders. Courses were in English, the examinations were in English, and the degree awarding ceremony was in English, and I signed all the degrees, and as I don't write Chinese, I signed them in English. And I inquired about this, and I was pleasantly surprised to find that from primary school right through to university in China, English is the second language. And I thought, well, of a billion people adopting English as their second language, and while most Chinese people in their teens, I suspect, aren't fluent in English, they surely understand the written word. And I wonder whether the average Australian realises the significant changes that have to take place in this country as we learn to live with China.
I agree. I think there are significant changes. In 1979, China's share of world trade was 1% of world trade. And like India now, they're essentially apart from the world economy. And they've now risen to about 6% of world trade. So it's been a very sort of steady increase in their share of world trade. They're in fact a very open economy. I was talking to someone just a moment ago about why a big increase, a big change in their exchange rate won't affect the Chinese economy very much. And the reason is a lot of China's exports have 80% plus import content. So they can have a 50, the estimates that I've made and seen are of the order that a 20% appreciation of China's currency will only affect the prices of their exports by a couple of percent. So they can have big movements in the exchange rate. It's not going to affect their currency very much, not going to affect their trade very much. They're basically now a part of the world economy that's going to become a bigger part of the world economy because they're very open to trade, very welcoming to foreign universities, to foreign business people. And we better get used to it. We better get used to thinking about dealing in Mandarin or having someone who can speak Mandarin, and we better get used to dealing with trade with China, because they're not going to stop at 6% of world trade. They'll with 25% of the world's population, they probably ought to be 10 to 15% of world trade. So there's a long way to go in this process of what is really reintegration of China into the world economy, having been apart since 1949. So I agree with you that essentially we need to be thinking about how we deal with what will be a very large economy and a very large trading partner moving forward. And there are lots of things education-wise and elsewhere that we need to be thinking about there. Yeah.
Mark Kimwitter-Jewis from BHP, Billiton. I'm interested in terms of the overall comments you've made about the US in particular, but what impact, if any, do you imagine the current activities of the US and us and others in Iraq and generally across the Middle East is having? And, I mean, figures touted a war that's costing up to $2 billion US a week, that the long-term nature of the engagement could cost the US $1 trillion. Obviously, it's a significant impact on Australia's economy. A lot of money is being diverted to support those activities, and the general spread of those activities across Middle East, and I guess Iran looms as another potential area for engagement. What impact, any, in economic terms, do you see that having?
Yep. On the US side, the budget deficit has grown for three reasons since Bush took office on the first occasion. One is this increase in military activity has had a very significant effect on the size of their budget deficit, stimulated the economy. The second impact has been through increases in government spending, which have been about the same size outside the military sector as in the military sector. And the third impact has been through tax cuts. So all of these three things are pointing in the same direction, bigger budget deficits and stimulating spending in the US. The bottom line is at some point the US is going to have to tighten its belt, and whether it does it through reduced military expenditure or reduced expenditure elsewhere or higher taxes remains to be seen. Presumably it's got to be some of each one of those three things. What's the impact directly of increased or then decreased defence expenditure on the US and then the world economy? Turns out generally it's pretty small. Obviously it has sectoral impacts, but generally it doesn't have a huge impact on the domestic. And we had the quote from Ahmed about the US twitching its nose and China sneezing and us catching pneumonia. I have a paper in the Reserve Bank conference volume last year, which is titled, "The US: If the US Sneezes, Do We Catch a Cold?" And it's actually a look back at 130 years of historical data and the relationship between the US and the Australian economy. And what I argue in there is that there are really only a small number of episodes where there's a very strong linkage from US recessions to Australian downturns. And there are reasons to believe that going forward, US weakening won't have such a significant effect on the Australian economy as it did historically. So I am not, even though I've argued there are a number of reasons to be worried about the US economy, I don't see that as having, it'll have an impact on the Australian economy, but it's not going to make us fall over. More like if the US catches a cold, we might sneeze.
I wanted to ask a question building off of some of the comments that have been made in some previous presentations about the relative short-sightedness of the Australian economy and the long-term thinking of some of the other international economies. And I want to relate that to climate change. And I've noticed that climate change hasn't really been a focus on predictions about what's going to happen in the future with our economy. Why is that, and is it something that you're thinking about, or is it something that you think is not going to have an impact?
Okay, climate change is something I'm thinking about, but it's not something that I see as having an impact in the next 2 or 3 years. I guess I would agree with you that the Australian government's got its head in the sand on this one. An interesting issue with an economy that's doing well is that I think you can be complacent. And as was argued earlier, there are economies like the Chinese economy where there is an explicit 5-year plan, but clearly the government is thinking longer term. Interestingly, China has been considering introducing green measures of GDP. Not many people know that, but they've been at the not many countries produce what are called green measures of GDP, measures of GDP that subtract off from GDP growth things like the amount of carbon emissions, degradation of forests and so on. So they've been trying to construct measures that they'll publish of green GDP. They've clearly been taking policy changes to try and improve their environment rather than worsen it. Another interesting development in China on that is that they've been much more open to debate about these issues. There's a gorge called Tiger Leaping Gorge, which they're considering having another Three Gorges dam on, but they've actually invited open consultation on that. So they're clearly thinking much more long-term about these issues. I think just as a general problem in Australia that policymakers aren't thinking long-term enough, and there's not the pressure there to do so. So in some sense, a short, sharp shot might be a good thing. I don't know, but I think there's a general lack of long-term thinking in both political and sometimes business circles in Australia.